You're listening to the Ceres Sustainability Podcast, an ongoing conversation with investors, corporations, policymakers, and environmentalists about how financial markets and businesses are trying to address the most pressing environmental issues of the day. From Ceres, I'm your host, Ian Gray. While the government continues to drag its feet on climate change, companies are beginning to feel the heat from investors to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions. This year, U.S.-based investors filed a record 54 proxy resolutions requesting companies to tackle the impacts of climate change on shareholder value. Resolutions range from asking General Motors to set greenhouse gas reduction targets to asking Bank of America to stop financing new coal-fired power plants. Shareholder activism on climate change is part of a larger trend called socially responsible investing, or SRI, that seeks to maximize both financial return and social good. In America, the movement is gaining traction. In the past 5 years alone, the number of assets in SRI vehicles in this country has grown to over $2 trillion. Lance Lindblom is president of the Nathan Cummings Foundation. With an endowment of over $500 billion, the Nathan Cummings Foundation is actively involved in both filing shareholder resolutions and advocating for socially responsible investing. Lance talked with Ceres from his office in New York City about how SRI affects his foundation's investment strategies.
There are really three ways that you could approach this through the kind of socially responsible investing lens. The first way is to screen your investments, to have a series of criteria in which you refuse to make investments in certain areas that don't meet those requirements. The difficulty with screening is that there is the difficulty of the metaphysics of blame and causation, and it's sorting through the complicated ownership entities and figuring out really who's causing the problem or who's the blame for the problem. And also there's a real difficulty in giving instructions to your investment advisors about what you want them to do. The second area is divestiture. Now there's thresholds that we would probably invest if we found somebody involved in slavery or any activity like that. But the real issue there is, why should you sell a stock and leave a premium on the table for a bad management? When you sell that stock, you're essentially rewarding that bad management. So we've really picked primarily the third area, which is to exercise our voice. And that is that if you're a stockholder, you can vote your proxies, essentially. You have a right to vote on that company's activities. And that's what we've chosen to do. We've chosen the engagement strategy. The whole issue is, how do you change the system? And this is one way within the system to try to change it.
So maybe you can go in a little bit more into these mechanisms of engagement. As an investor, you know, how do you pay attention to all the businesses in your portfolio, and which ones do you pick to engage with?
We have a portfolio of over $500 million. It's very easy, really, to keep track of how to vote on proxy issues. There are proxy services that aren't that expensive. There's a number of websites and networks and organizations that help with the analysis of this. We vote over 600 to 700 proxies a year. That takes a total of 11 hours of staff time to do. So it's not hard to do. We also bring resolutions, which essentially is that if you own a stock for a year and you have over $2,000 of that stock, you have the right to bring a shareholder resolution. And this year we'll be bringing 15 resolutions.
Okay, and I think probably a lot of our listeners might not know exactly what a resolution is, a shareholder resolution. So maybe you can walk us through an example of one that you're working on right now, or an example of one that was successful in the past that you brought against a company.
Sure. This is always a pleasure to do, so you'll have to stop me. But why don't I give an example of the kinds of things that we're bringing now. We brought a series of resolutions. For example, one was with Valero, which is one of the largest oil refiners in the United States, probably the largest independent refiner. And it was about transparency about greenhouse gas emissions. We brought this, I think, in 2004. At first, there was real resistance from the company, who thought that it really wasn't based on any kind of science and that it was really a political agenda. But once we brought it and talked to them, and there are also what are called proxy services, which recommend how to vote on proxies that people subscribe to. And they were going to vote with us. And so the company essentially changed its perspective, and they decided that greenhouse gases was a real issue, that they were going to keep track of it, that they were actually going to form a baseline, and that they made a commitment that by 2008, they were going to reduce them by 5%. So that's one example. And we found that there are a number of companies, once we bring these resolutions, that we don't even have to continue supporting them, because they would talk to us and say that we will change and we think that's a very good idea. What's really most important is it gets their attention. And it allows a dialogue and a discussion to take place. And that's probably the most important part. It kind of breaks that corporate management bubble sometimes and allows the conversation to occur.
So I'm curious, have you seen the value of your investments improve because of these strategies? Or does shareholder activism equal loss of rate of return?
That's a key question, and it's very difficult to sort out. All I can say is that we're bringing all these resolutions, and our returns are quite high. We do very well in comparison to our peers, often in the top quartile, which is incredible for performance. But again, it's very hard to sort out all the causes and effects, but we're convinced that it does, and we do well in our returns.
So, okay, despite the ability of shareholders to bring resolutions, there's pretty strict rules limiting what shareholders can do. How big an impact can investors actually have in pushing corporations to change enough to avert crises like global warming or other catastrophic events that might severely impact not just the company, but all sorts of people?
Yes, it's a start. And what it does is it gives space for people to really talk about these things. There have been the head of Duke Energy and Synergy who said that it was stockholders that really brought him to speak out more about greenhouse gas emissions from his own companies and to talk about the public policy solutions to that. No, it's a start. It's not a complete change, but it's beginning to get people to change their thinking and their approaches, and to know that this is going to be a huge constraint and is a huge constraint. But it has to be done in conjunction with a whole series of other public policies and issues, from certain types of regulations coupled with massive public investments and research and development to really grapple with these issues. The other thing is that we have to be very clear about, this is one way of starting to address these issues, but it's not the only way. And there are issues. The Security and Exchange Commission has been quite conservative how they interpret the law and the regulations in this area. And I would be so bold as to say that they're more concerned about protecting corporate managements than their statutory mandate, which is to protect stockholders. That said, we really have to take a look at what those regulations are and how they're being interpreted.
Yeah, the whole political wrangling involved in the SEC angle is frustrating.
Yeah, I think, you know, all you have to do is ask yourself the question, what was the SEC doing with Enron and WorldCom when these things were happening? And what was the SEC doing when this subprime mess was being created? Why were these people asleep? What was going on? It's not like this was not known. I mean, people should not have been surprised by this. This was years in the making, and a number of people have been raising these issues. So the SEC has really failed this country in dealing with these questions. You know, if markets aren't policed, they're not going to work. And the policemen were asleep.
And that seems like the best rule, that if government's not doing that, the only place you can go after that is the owner of the company. So,
right. And the government should be doing it. You know, there's no such thing as a market that's unregulated. The markets are always embedded within a social context, and they always have to be, they always fulfill certain people's interests. So it's very important that the society, through government or other mechanisms, make sure that those markets are policed if they really are to be efficient and have the kind of social impact we want them to have. we always have to ask the basic question is, what is the economy for? If it's not for the well-being of people, then what's it for?
Well, Lance, it's been really great talking to you. We've just covered a lot of good material. So thanks for taking the time today to speak with the Series Podcast.
It's my pleasure.
That was Lance Lindblom, president of the Nathan Cummings Foundation. To find out more about this year's climate-related shareholder resolutions, visit www.series.org. For a practical guide to climate-related investing, click on the publications link on our website and download our Climate Investor Toolkit. And while you're at it, feel free to drop a note about this podcast if you have any feedback for us. Thanks for listening. From Series, I'm Ian Gray.
It's a whole need for corporate accountability, and one of the ways to do that are the people that own those companies. The fact is, we're a stockholder. We are an owner, and we have to exercise our fiduciary responsibilities as owners.